Well, folks, welcome to another episode of Sonship Podcast, and I'm John McDonald, your host. My guest today is a lady called Ray McKinley, and Ray is a storyteller, a comic artist. She's been an activist. She's been many guises through her life, but I'll let her tell you more about it in a little moment. Ray, welcome.
Thank you.
Great to have you.
Thank you, John, for inviting me. It's a real pleasure to be doing this podcast.
We met first back in the 90s, way back in the south side of Glasgow.
We did.
Hopefully we're both a lot wiser as well as older now.
Oh, you're actually making me laugh now when I think of those beginning days.
Oh, my goodness. We'll try not to go in too deep into those days. It could be embarrassing for both of us.
Oh, well.
But tell us a little bit about how did you get into storytelling and the comic stuff, Ray? Because you weren't doing all of that when I knew you back then in the 90s. Or were you doing it secretly?
Now, that's a good question, John. I suppose I got into comics and storytelling late, doing it as a sort of career option. But I have always been a storyteller, and I was always interested in comics when I was growing up. I had a terrible label on me. I was stupid because I loved comics. It wasn't fashionable then to like comics.
Yeah.
Now it's far more fashionable to like comics. And the nerd is quite... he's got a bit more prestige than it... than we did when I was younger, so
yeah. Comics were things we did when we were like 10, 11 years old, 9 years old, but then you're supposed to grow out of them, weren't you?
Yes, you're supposed to start reading Black Beauty, which I did and loved, but I still loved comics. And I read them when I was 14 and 15, 16 and 17, and then I sort of put them, put them under the bed because I never admitted to it because I was fed up with the label that was stuck upon me.
Wow. And we obviously met because of we had a common faith. But how did you get into the whole faith thing? Did you grow up in a Christian home or a spiritual home, or was that something you came to later?
I grew up in an upwardly mobile family that was at the roots atheist.
Right, wow.
My father read a lot of philosophy, and he was really kind of propelled by Marx and a lot of the other commentators on socialism and international, but all without anything to do with any religion. He thought religion, like Marx, I suppose, was the opium of the people.
Yeah. Wow. Was your investigation of faith like a rebellion then?
No, not really, because I never became a Christian until I was late on in life. Uh-huh. I was actually about in my late 30s. I was totally, totally unchurched. And that's where some of the problems I had because I came from totally unchurched, and people thought I ought to know. I mean, I grew up outside Glasgow, and we know there's the toxic religious ropes there. So I suppose that was my awareness of religion. I won't call it faith, I'll call it religion.
Yeah.
And for me, it was always a list of what to do, and in my case, what not to do, and that was it. And I suppose with all the chattering that was going about or on religion or whatever, I learned to navigate a path with the volume turned down, and that's what I did.
And it's interesting, isn't it, because I think from other people I've spoken to, it seems to be a thing, especially for women, that they get labelled more quickly than men, maybe, as being troublesome or, a hopeless case or whatever, you know. So it's interesting you say that, because I've spoken to a few people, and it seems to be that women very quickly are categorised
Yeah, I was. I have experienced labelling. I've had a lot of labels on me. I've had the label of being rebellious because I ask questions and maybe critically thinking something, or my experience doesn't quite add up to the person who's saying it to me. I also had that a lot of toxic kind of other labels on me, and including one that I was really dodgy as well. I mean, I had a, you know, dodgy, pagan, and troublesome, rebel. I had all those labels on me.
I thought you were just a hippie.
I had that one as well. I was sort of a hippie punk, John. The hippies was a generation before me. No, not a generation, 10 years before me. Yeah.
True.
I was also an eco-warrior as well. Oh, so a lot of things that I forgot about now.
That's right. You spent time at Fuzz Lane, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I did. And that all started years and years ago. Now, imagine, right? Imagine air that is fresh as lemonade and a sky that converses with a lock and landscape around it. Now, imagine a horrible big monster in that lock. And that lock was not embracing, like, and not the lock, the monster wasn't as embracing as the lock. And that lock was called the Holy Lock. And the name of that lock was way back in the 6th century from an Irish monk called St. Fintan, or St. Mund, as known in Scotland. And he built a monastery there. And God spoke at that time there. And now there was this great thing of death and doom. So that's why I got involved into the peace movement. And that was the American base, the Polaris base.
That's fascinating. I didn't know the history of that. Right. I knew obviously Holy Lock was because there had been Christian, but I didn't know about St. Fintan and stuff like that in the monastery.
There's an amazing amount of stories in central Scotland. There's the story of the Clyde, has a story. And actually, it's reputed that Pontius Pilate himself, his father was stationed out at one of the outreaches at Antonine Wall. Now, whether it's true or not, I don't know. But the thing about stories, John, it's not whether they're true, it's the treasure that you find within. So there's always treasure.
That's true. Wow. So how did you find the whole faith thing, Ray? Because that must have been very difficult for you, like being labelled and kind of feeling ostracised. And how did you navigate that? How did you cope with that? Because that must have been just as damaging as any other kind of treatment outside of faith circles.
Well, that's another very good question, John. Sometimes when I look back, I don't know how I did it. But I did have good allies. Now, in the church, there I had a good group of people who were very, very supportive. But also, I think my life, I had so many other things going on in my life that I kind of navigated a life outside the church as well.
Right.
And I needed to do that.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes I did go home and I thought, what on earth are they talking about? I mean, I thought, there seemed to be this thing, middle class and sort of working class and maybe not so working class. And I wasn't any of those because I did grow up in a middle class family.
Yeah.
But the problem I had was when I came into the church, I was homeless. I was in the streets of Glasgow.
I didn't realise that,
mate. Yeah,
when you came in that you'd been homeless.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I read your story in The Big Issue, but...
Yeah, which they edited some parts out.
Oh.
They didn't bring any Christian aspect to that one, but never mind. I still had the story in The Big Issue. I was homeless at that time. And I think the problem was that I came in to the church through homelessness. And I think many people thought I was stupid, because I remember one person saying to me, "I don't think you're as stupid as other people think you are." And I thought, "What?" And they didn't realize they had said that.
Yeah. You know,
they were
wow.
They were trying to be complimentary and support me and make me feel good, but I could see behind
but then
that.
They're telling you everyone thinks you're stupid.
Yeah.
And I never got that impression from you.
No, maybe you didn't person. Because you spoke to me, but some people did think I was intellectually challenged, sort of thing, in many ways. Yeah. And it didn't help that for me, I got fed up being on the streets.
Yes.
Because you cannot sleep. There's a coldness and there's a silencing. There's a silencing because if you say anything, there's always a threat of violence. There's always that violence in the shadow. Mm-hmm. So I ended up doing what a lot of women do who are homeless. I ended up moving in with someone. And of course, I came from the perspective that I was very unchurched. I was on the streets and I was ye of little faith, because people would say to me, "Move out that relationship and things will go good." Well, I didn't want to go back into the sort of the Hamish Allen Centre, and there was the Inglefield and there was other places that I ended up staying overnight. I just couldn't do it. The noise was too much for me, and I mean noise. There's a noise and chaos.
Yes.
That if you're there, you can only hear, and I could hear that noise.
Yeah, I experienced that. I was homeless for a while, and I eventually was in the old Buchanan Hotel in Buchanan Street.
Yeah, I know that.
It was a horrible experience.
Yeah,
and I can only imagine how bad that must have been for a woman, because I know how it made me feel as a man who kind of could take care of myself a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
So that, I can only imagine how threatening that would be for a female.
Yeah, because you lose a lot of your dignity, you lose a lot of your femininity, and I'm talking about positive femininity here. I'm not necessarily talking about the social construct of femininity.
Yes.
And you lose a lot of that. I became aggressive because I had to survive, because that's what it was like, survival. And it really kind of tore me apart. So when I moved into this house with this person, and that wasn't a bed of roses either. It was totally chaotic. And I kind of thought it was the best option.
Yeah.
So I suppose I don't actually hold anything against people who actually were trying to help me then, because it was well-intentioned. But it was a case of me with little faith, because I was only young in the faith and a toddler. So that was it. But it finally dissipated and things began to get a lot better.
Hmm. Wow. How did things improve? Was that due to being in the house, or was that due to having a faith community, or was it just a combination of things?
It was actually a combination of things. I was given a house in Pollock Shaws, one of the high-rise flats, and that didn't go well.
Mm.
And I was selling the big issue, and I was actually good at selling the big issue. I made quite a bit of money selling the big issue. I knew how to sell, sort of thing like that. Yeah.
Just to let folks know who aren't from the UK, the big issue is a magazine that was produced and sold by homeless people to enable them to reclaim some dignity and some sense of worth because they were working. So that's what the big issue was. Sorry, Ray.
That's okay. I forgot this. This is a global podcast. I'm really honoured now. Yeah. So I was pretty good at actually selling. I had saved money up, and the house in Pollock Shaws was really terrible. I was getting a lot of hassle in that place. So the breakthrough came when I got a house in Craigie Street.
Mm.
And I don't think I've answered your question. Have I gone off? And I got a house in Craigie Street, which, again, some people said to me, you can't move in there because Govan Hill doesn't have a good name. Well, that's not necessarily true, and especially not now. But it was the best
thing. It depends where you're from, whether you think it's got a good name or not.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I was told that. And I thought, I liked a house. I liked a flat. And the 2 years I spent in Govan Hill was the best years that I ever had.
Wow.
In Scotland, except when my family was growing up. It was the best years because I just moved at the right time with the occupation of the pool.
Of course, yes, the swimming pool at Govan Hill.
Yes. And do you know, John, I can't believe it. I'm in the Guinness Book of Records twice. One for the occupation of the pool, and the other for being a leprechaun. So, yeah, I was a leprechaun. I don't know if the record still holds, but
oh,
yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
And that pool was actually a lifesaver for me. And I firmly believe today that God used that pool to actually propel me forward and bring me to Ireland and then bring me into storytelling and then bring me into comics.
Because yeah, the whole thing was they were closing the community swimming pool, weren't they?
And yes.
Was it a sit-in there was? An occupation or something?
Well, we actually occupied the building by some swimmers going in for a swim and not coming out the pool. And then we had a rally of people going in, which I did myself, going into the building. And, you know, it's really freaky being in that building at night. I tell you that the stories in that building. And we continued that on and on until the night when the sheriff officers came in to lock and board the building up. And that's when we had the Battle of Calder Street.
Yeah.
And now, Govan Hill is a great place to live in now. Because from that occupation, and the reason I went into that occupation wasn't because I just wanted to cause a riot or anything like that. No, people spoke around the little fire at the Bothy, and the conversations were so interesting. They were talking about all sorts of things, sociology, marginalisation, even faith, because we had people from all walks of life there. And none. And the conversations, especially when it became kind of faith orientated, it was so, so interesting.
Wow.
And I kind of loved it. And I love those people. The core of the people at Govan Hill, I love. And I really wanted to help that community out.
Yeah.
I wanted to see them prosper on an earthly sense as well. Because often I feel that in Christianity, and I understand the aspect of the soul, I do, I'm not saying that it's not important, but there's also something about loving people and loving a community that you want to do good for that community. And when I went back recently, I was so overwhelmed by what's going on in Govan Hill now. As well as we won the battle for the pool, and it's going to reopen with two pools, Turkey's bath, other things, and a cafe, there is now a radio station in Govan Hill on Victoria Road.
Is there?
Oh, yes. There's also, Rhianne has opened up the newsroom, which is solution-focused, and there's the Greater Govan Hill magazine. And across the road has the Bee's Knees Cafe, where all sorts of poetry, storytelling, music goes on.
Bee's Knees is good.
Yeah. And you have the Deep End, where you can go and carve, where you can go and learn how to make clay pots. You can hire tools. There's so much going on.
So it's become quite a creative hub.
Hmm?
It's become quite a creative hub.
It is a creative hub. And that was due to the core of the Govan Hill Basque community, who actually have put a lot of work into trying to make that community good. And I learned so much from that. Wow. I learned people coming together. There's an Irish word called lochéile, which means people linking together, and it's everything that links together. And we had our disagreements and we had our conflicts, but we still managed to work through them. We spent time with each other. We supported each other. And if I ever came back to Scotland, I would love to come back and live in Govan Hill, but I'm not sure for me that would be a good thing because of my past.
Yeah.
Even though it was 20 years ago, some people remember forever. So
true.
I see the power in actually community coming together.
But isn't that interesting, Ray? You found the community there and people of faith and no faith and all kinds of things and an acceptance that you weren't finding in a Christian community. That's really interesting.
Yeah. No, I have to make this clear. I did have some allies, and I'm not saying everyone, right?
No, of course not.
I wouldn't want to say that. And I know that a lot of people encouraged me not to be in the pool.
Right.
But there was one good pastor who was very encouraging. And when he came in as leadership, he was very, very supportive, and he encouraged me to stay. And it's the same with Faslane. When you're linked arms with each other, people talk about religion, faith, politics, sociology. We have great conversations. And for me, it's about listening. I always find the listening the most important thing, because as a storyteller, I have discovered conversations has a rhythm. There's a rhythm which is a connection to the heart. It's not a connection from the head to the head. And sometimes when you're giving out a track, because that was another label I had, that I was a super evangelist. I did have that as well. You know, send Ray in, the super evangelist. I hope I can say this. Can I get, well, I'm older now. you know, Ray, the super evangelist. And I didn't want to be the super evangelist. I just wanted to be the person that just sat and spoke and speak to people. And I often found that when you get to a place with a person, when it's real, because the stories is in the pauses. It's in the breath. It's not just the words. It's in the eyes. And you get to that place and there's a rhythm in the story and a rhythm in the conversation and a rhythm with the person. And it's much easier to talk to the person.
Yeah. Wow.
Because I think often, as I said a few moments ago, that we can sometimes be so intellectual. You know, I like books, the story of the book, but sometimes the story of the book becomes head to head and it doesn't touch the heart.
Yeah.
Because I've sat and listened to many, many people from all walks of life, and I'm going to change names here. I've listened to Tanya, who's a they, who was transitioning. And the tears in their eyes because of the struggle they had. And I was speechless. I didn't know what to do. I only knew how to love. So I just hugged and just listened.
Yeah.
Because, as I say, hands up, I'm no expert. I'm not. I have a faith, but I sometimes and often I don't understand that. I listened to another changed name, I'm going to call her Dana, who was one of the Catholic workers who sabotaged the plane in Shannon during the Iraq War.
All right.
And I supported this group when they were in the Four Courts up in Dublin. And I wanted to find out why she did it, because I don't like to make assumptions. I wanted to find out. So I went for brunch with her and I said, why did you do it? And Dana would come from a Catholic perspective.
Yes.
And she said, I did it for my faith. And she told me the story that if somebody had a gun and they were going to shoot people, it would be your duty to disarm the person. She said that plane was going to kill thousands of people in Iraq. And before the Iraq war had happened, there was 13 years of sanctions and there was no medical supplies and there was no food. And I know this because I know someone who actually went into Iraq at that time before the war. And I listened to her speak. She's a woman from Oban. So she said she felt it was her duty to do that. And she was such a soft-spoken person. And it was like God was speaking to me through Dana. It was kind of like she was soft and reflective in her faith. Mm-hmm. She wasn't the mighty warrior, if I can use that term.
Yeah.
And of course I went home and she had made such an impression on me that I thought, what about my faith? Would I do that in love?
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to another woman when I was invited to do a workshop at COP26, and she told the story of the missing Indigenous Native American woman. And she told it in such a way, and that's why I like stories and storytelling, because there's a human element when you tell a story.
Mm.
And I mean, we all know that Jesus was a storyteller with all his parables. He told parables and he got people to think. He didn't just always say, this is the way it should be. It was kind of like opening it up. No, have a think about this, reflect and contemplate. So, yeah, I'm so grateful that I do love stories, because stories have actually got me through.
Yeah, wow. So how did you transition, Ray, from being a reader of stories, a listener of stories, to a teller of stories? How did that happen?
Oh, that happened here in Ireland.
So how did you get to Ireland first? Don't tell me by boat. That's...
How did I get to Ireland? Okay. Well, when I was in Govan Hill and things were getting better through the poor occupation, I was asked by a Christian man called Paul to accompany him in the London Mind, Body and Spirit Festival. And from that, I was asked by a man called Roger, who lived in the West Country, round about Taunton and Troll and Glastonbury, to accompany him into Glastonbury. And I had the most marvellous time living in a teepee. And it was when I was in that teepee, someone came to me and said they were looking for somebody to work over in Cool Mountain in Ireland. So I can't actually remember how I actually made the initial contact. I mean, there wasn't any messenger in those days or Facebook. So the next thing that happened was I ended up in Ireland with the role to go up to Cool Mountain and I suppose be a missionary. But that never happened. I'll tell you why that never happened. And it turned out for good. It was a raven black night and the rain was pouring and I was in this rickety caravan and it was cold. And I was kind of saying, this doesn't feel right, me being the sort of missionary to people who were actually a lot like me, downshifters, the anti-capitalists. You see, there was a whole movement that I think the church in Glasgow never recognised the same way that the church maybe down in Glastonbury recognised. That there were people who weren't just middle class or on the streets or whatever, but there were people who had rebelled against their middle classness. Because a lot of people up in that mountain at that time, because obviously it's 20 years ago and it's changed, were people who had the same expectations on them as I had. I was to be a doctor.
Yeah.
And there was people there whose fathers were in the military and merchant bankers, and they had all this, used to go, this is your pathway to life. But they wanted something different. And I thought, these are people who, on the whole, didn't like organized religion, who would have thought of me as someone as I wasn't, because I wasn't that type of person. So what happened was I went to the board and I said, I'll stay, but I don't want to be a missionary. I'll find other work to do and just be a person that's in the community, because I can't do that, and I couldn't do it. It's not my makeup, and it just wouldn't be right. And surprisingly, it must have been God, they agreed.
Wow.
So that was it. I was very happy until a week later. I can honestly say I'm a Christian and I've been on fire. I was literally on fire.
Oh, yeah. What happened?
I was on fire. And Edwin actually said a prayer for me in Queen's Park about this one. My skirt caught fire, and I ended up in a big ball of fire. I saw tongues of
orange
and blue. And you know, something. I saw a big shield. I saw a big shield around me.
Wow.
And I ended up in hospital. And the thing that really scared me, because you remember, I was not worth a button. I really wasn't. I was really short. A doctor came up to me and said to me, your wounds, which I didn't have any, I only had one little slight scar at the back of my knee, are not consistent with your story. And I thought, oh gosh, they're going to send me to see a psychiatrist. What am I going to say? So I phoned Fiona.
I can just imagine you saying to the psychiatrist, God saved me.
Yes. I phoned Fiona. I'm allowed to say her name. I haven't changed Fiona's name because she deserves to be known. And I said, Fiona, I'm coming over. And Fiona greeted me. I was in a terrible state. I had hollow eyes. I had a chiseled in face. I didn't even know what to think, because surviving the fire with no injuries was not, it didn't make me totally happy, because it confused me.
Right.
And Fiona was very good. She got me a house in Kilbarkin for 6 months. And I didn't go to church then. I was too scared to go to church. Mm-hmm. I didn't want people saying to me, hallelujah, you survived.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of trauma in it as well, because I couldn't get my head around it.
I can imagine.
And up until very recently, I never spoke about it, because I didn't know what to make of it. And I was saying, God, you knew I was going to go in fire and you saved me from the fire. I know I'm supposed to be grateful, but why? You know, there was all that kind of stuff, all this questioning. I ended up going down to Liverpool and I saw the ferry to Dublin. And I only had just enough money for my fare.
Wow.
And I just went on that boat. Yeah,
wow.
I did. When I think back of my once upon a time days, when I did those things, I just lived. You know, I've just got enough money, I'll just go.
Wow.
That reminds me
of Jackie Pullinger.
Oh, gosh. She did Yeah.
But she did this. She did the exact same thing. This is how much money I've got. How far will the boat take me? Okay. And she ended up in Hong Kong. She didn't plan to go to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
That was just all where her money took her.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, what a woman. She's a great woman.
That's quite daring. Just
yeah.
jumping around the boat to Dublin.
I just went to Dublin and not Hong Kong. And then I ended up getting a job in a Catholic retreat centre, which did influence my faith a lot because I had 5 wonderful years there. It wasn't like a job at all. It was so nourishing. There were so many people that came in and they were reading Rohr and Newman and O'Donohue and all that kind of stuff.
Wow.
And it was also a creative place as well. You were having things like the Artist Way. And I just loved my time there. So I managed to work and just be a person in the community. And that's what I wanted. So, you know, I think I've went the long way around answering your questions.
That's all right. That's all right. It's interesting to listen to.
Oh, sorry.
That's fabulous. That's fascinating.
So then getting into storytelling, I met marvellous Maria, who's a great Bonfarsa. That's a woman of the wisdom.
Oh, I've seen you talking about Maria on Facebook.
Yes, the Bon. If you want to hear a storyteller, it's definitely Maria. And it just kind of happened one day. I went to a storytelling event and I was given a sponge and told I had to go up and tell a story. And then when you get the sponge, you hand it over to someone and you tell the story. And if they don't like the story, they've got permission to throw the sponge in water and get you off. But I managed to go through the whole story. And, do you know, one of the things that I never realised that I've got, and God is so good, all that time when I was in Glasgow and doing all those stupid things, you know, how to evangelise, how not to evangelise, but somehow it works, you know, sort of thing. All those things that I made mistakes with, I could actually tell those stories. And I'm telling those stories into all different kinds of people. People who, I mean, who don't even like Christians, but they think it's funny. And it's like, ooh, I told you I did something right way back then. That's only my pride. Forget that one. You had to edit that out. But, yeah, so that's how it happened. And then from that, I did a storytelling event, and then it went from another storytelling event. It just was so many storytelling events.
So you're telling stories, God's somewhere in the mix.
Yeah.
And you rediscover comics.
I rediscovered comics during COVID.
Right.
And I got so bored with COVID, and I live rural as well. And the 5K restrictions was doing my head in. Zoom was good. I connected with Ladies Do Comics. It's a UK-based comic organisation, and they became on Zoom. And I did a workshop just to keep me sane. And from that workshop, a group of us got together over the death of Sarah Everett, and it was my first changing placards to pages. I did, along with the other women, a comic page on gender violence.
Wow.
And we came together and we made an anthology and we published that. And I began to feel that I liked comics more than actually the oral storytelling. So lately I've done less and less storytelling, because storytelling, it's a lot of night work. It's a lot of traveling.
Yes.
And I really didn't want to do that anymore. So I started concentrating on comics. And then this lovely woman from Govan Hill, she saw one of my comic strips, and she said to me, "We would love you to do something for this comic that we're doing, and it's the stories of Scottish resistance movements." Oh. Like Colin with the M77, yes. Caterpillar, Red Clydeside. And I couldn't believe that they asked me to do a story in comic form. And I did it. And it's published, John. And I was like, I've got my story on the bath, on the pool, where people said to me, "Don't go. That's not godly," because it's always like, give Caesar his due. And I began to feel like, even working in St. Dominic's, the Catholic Retreat Centre, I used to spend time in a little chapel by myself, and it was so beautiful. Mm. It was the absence of chattering, but the echoes were sweet with it, with just, you know, a stillness that just spoke into your heart, which I felt was God. Mm. And I thought, I can't do all this mighty warrior kind of stuff, if I can say that. I just can't do it. And of course, I go home and I thought, am I cracking up? Am I being a heretic? Am I really not saved? And all those questions go through.
Yeah.
But I can't do it. I just want to be with people and just be friends and, you know.
I think that's a good way to live.
You think so?
I do,
thank you, John.
I do. I think that's a good way to live.
Hmm?
I think that's a good way to live.
Yeah, because the mighty warrior, I class it as the mighty warrior. It's just me being a storyteller. You know, get out there and do this and do that and do that and do that. And the thing was, I mean, I even had that label, as I said earlier, on myself, and it was like the pressure to, and maybe there's something about pressure and people make mistakes because they're expected to be the person that always has a word of knowledge or plays a note right.
Yes.
And maybe it's somewhere in that expectation, whereas I've learned that I have made loads of mistakes, John. I have made loads of mistakes.
Oh, haven't we all? We all have.
I was. I mean, really was. And the things I said to poor Fiona, at least I got a chance to say I was sorry. She was still there with me on my side. And I've made loads of mistakes. I mean, they sent me out to do evangelism, and I ended up getting in a brawl at one time with someone.
Really?
Sorry?
I didn't know that.
Oh, John, do you remember the videos, the Jesus videos?
Yes, the movie, yeah.
And I remember going to the meeting and the pastor coming in, and it was from Cheltenham or something like that, and he said, and you notice, when a man comes to the door, the man goes forward, and, and when a woman comes, the woman goes forward. And I panicked, because remember, I was unchurched. I didn't talk like that. I didn't act like that. Yeah. And I thought, and I shouted out, "I can't do that." But anyway, they gave me the videos to take out, and I won't mention his name, although he never did anything wrong, but it's just in case, you know.
Sure.
And I had a great partner, and it was Sunday morning, and I was Albert Road in Govan Hill, northern part of Glasgow, and it was quiet. Everybody was in their bed.
Yeah.
And we looked at each other, going, no one answering the door. Then the next thing that happened, I banged the door, and this guy shouts, "Who is this, right?" And now this is absolutely true, because this guy will verify it. I picked up the letterbox and I shouted, "It's a Sunday, it's your local Bible thumper." And the guy running to the door.
Oh, dear.
And I shoved the guy away, because this wasn't the case of a guy goes to the door, because you know of locking and all that kind of stuff, locking up guys. And I said, hi, what's the difference between a Christian and a Bible thumper? And he just looked at me and I goes, relationship, and here's a video. So the next thing that happened in the next one, and then was we couldn't get access, so we buzzed all the doors, because you know the doors have those security doors.
Yeah.
And this woman opened the door, and she said, what have you got there? And I just said, oh, it's Jesus videos. You're not coming in here with those things. And I said, fine. You might not want one, but someone else might. You're not coming in. And then she shoved me. And I shoved her back. And it was this thing with all the videos going everywhere. And this guy's defending us.
Oh, my goodness.
You see, the story goes, God was in it. I got very, very convicted. And I felt, oh, I shouldn't have been doing that. And I met her 3 days later. And both of us went to the cafe because I invited her for a cup of tea. Because it's like that in Govan Hill.
Yes.
Sort of argue and see the funny side. And then, you know, what happened? We had a great conversation. I was telling her how hard it was to be a Christian. I never was going the other way because I was being honest at that time.
Yeah.
And I was finding it difficult because I was unchurched and all the rest of stuff. And that was the truth. I was talking in the truth. And she was telling me why she didn't like Christians because she had been abused through a Christian person. And that's why she didn't like it. And do you know that she actually went to Alpha?
Wow.
And I know, and I mean, I'm shocked at that.
That's amazing.
I'm really shocked. A story that I don't want to tell, but God has worked it out that I have no pride that I tell because it worked out for good for him.
Wow.
So that's amazing. That was the truth. That is the truth. She went to Alpha and then I lost touch with her. But
that's amazing, Ray. Yeah.
And I mean, I'm telling you the truth. This is not something.
It just shows that it doesn't matter how much of a dafty we are, it can still take it and do something.
All that woman wanted was someone to talk to her about faith in a truthful, honest way. Now, I'm not saying faith is truthful, but
I know what you mean.
But for me at that time, being unchurched, just being a new Christian, not having a clue what I was doing, that was what God used to reach that woman. So that's it.
Yeah. So I mean, where would you say you are with faith and stuff now, Ray?
Okay. I have a secure faith. After all, I've been on fire. I survived it, and I know God protected me. I have a very secure faith that way. But I'm struggling with some things. Maybe not struggling, I'm reflecting on some things. I have walked away from the charismatic, Pentecostal type of church.
Yeah.
I've connected with maybe a local church, which is nice, and I'm getting nurtured in a way. But I also know that maybe my time in West Cork is coming to an end. I kind of know that because there's work maybe somewhere else to do.
Yeah.
But I've also connected with a lovely group of Christians through Zoom, and I know that's not ideal, but it's just a group of 18 people, and they are climate activists sort of thing, and we talk about really deep, meaningful Christian subjects, which I need so I'm at that stage also that I thank God for my life journey, even through all those horrible, horrible, turbulent times that I've had. Because through those turbulent times, I've had a lot of funny moments as well that I've been very, very blessed. And I'm sitting here now that even that dippy hippie who always got into bother and God used her in ways that I never realised.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very thankful because it was my love for, it was my love for Govan Hill, and I won't pretend I like Govan Hill, and I love the people here in West Cork.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and I just love the people, and it's just that thing to make their life a bit better, just a bit mm-hmm. better. Because if you tell somebody a story, I just stop and talk to them and give them a smile. For me, that works for me better than handing out tracts, because I'm terrible at handing out tracts. And I'm not good in an evangelistic team. The only time I was good was down in Glastonbury. But I'm not good at that, because I get told, you have to just give out a tract or say this or whatever. And somebody comes along and I think, oh, they're interesting. I want to know all about them. So it's not good. I mean, I don't work that way. So that was me.
But do you know what? I don't think God wants to make you like everyone else. He wants you to be Ray.
Yeah.
And do what Ray would do.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And
yeah.
And I think you brought it up at the start. I think it's so important, that connection that you talked about.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what people are looking for.
Yeah.
You know, they're not looking to be lectured, they're looking to make connection.
Yeah.
And that's something you seem to be very good at.
And I mean, by that, I'm not saying that I'm always nice and sweet. I'm not. I just told about the story about the women when we were in a tussle. I mean, I started off as us chopping and tussling each other and whatever. But it's kind of, I have to be real in my honesty. And I have said sorry to so many people. And I have done that. If I'm wrong, I will say I'm sorry. I remember going up in front of church and said I was sorry, because I was being stupid and whatever. And I say that. And I actually feel, well, I'm in my 60s now and I maybe have a bit of wisdom. I do feel more sorrow for those that's maybe followed a Christian path and kept it all kind of neat and been scared to do things. Yeah. They've missed out a lot of joy. And this thing about, which I didn't like, was at the time when certain kind of groups of people that I all hang about with, you've got to be careful, you know, because I remember one scene coming over and Westcott, there's lots of alternative religions. I would have to leave Westcott to get away from them. And I mentioned something about my neighbour, you know, and she was a pagan. Oh, do you have to get away from that? And it's, you have to go. And I'm thinking, what?
You need to go and live up a tree somewhere.
Yeah. She's just a normal person. I mean, a very nice person. Maybe the time has come for people to know what different groups of people are like. So, I don't know. Anyway, I'm just thankful that I did have the story and the journey that I came, because it must be very sad to be on your deathbed. And I know we've got hope and a future, but to think of all the things maybe you missed out because you were too scared and too afraid.
I love what God said to Fiona, my Fiona.
Yeah.
When she was asking him, you know, what's your will? Is this your will for me? And he said to her, you're asking the wrong question.
Yeah.
And she said, well, what's the question? And he said, will this bring me life? I think that's a great question. It sounds like that's the question you've always asked, Ray.
Yeah.
Unconsciously. Will this bring me life?
When I heard that Fiona speak on the podcast, and when she said that, that was like a moment of impact. That was an epiphany moment, because I never thought I did that. But that's a beautiful, profound way and a nourishing way of looking at life.
Yeah. But listen to your story, that's what you've done. You've gone where you found life. And it might not look to some religious people as the right thing, but it's where you found life for your soul.
Yeah.
And I think that's been important. And look where it's taking you.
Yeah.
You know, you've had your stories published, you've told stories all over Ireland and parts of Scotland and
And America. America was invited. Yes.
Wow.
Don't forget the good old USA, which I love. Yes, and I do.
Awesome. Wow.
Yeah. So
that's fabulous.
I mean, I've met so many interesting people, storytelling, people that I would never have met, people that are working in the outback of Australia with native, indigenous, aboriginals and all that kind of stuff. And I've listened to their stories, and I would never have thought that the women that went into Queen's Park, the day that I made that moment of salvation, was the day when God told me that night. It was Ian White. It was Ian White.
Yeah.
And I felt I was on holy ground, and I took off my Doc Martin and a screwdriver fell out in the park. You know, and kind of, because that's where I was then, because I had a good kind of upbringing, and I went down into all that chaos and all that kind of stuff. And now it's like God's given me the life that I really like, actually.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I like my life, you know.
That's awesome. I think that from you, people listening to your story, I think the encouragement is that there is no one way to journey faith.
No.
You know, it's where do you find life? Well, go there and see what God does. I love that that's what, you know, like you found life and just jumping on a boat to Dublin.
Yeah, I did.
You know, a lot of people are sitting thinking that's crazy.
But
that was life to you.
Yeah.
And everyone's looking and maybe saying, Ray, you're off your head. Why are you doing that? And say, because I'm going for the adventure.
Yeah. I still like adventure. Even though I'm in my 60s, I still like adventure.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
That's fantastic.
You talked a lot about me.
No, it's good. I think you're a fascinating person. You've got a fabulous story. And I think it deserves to be heard.
I mean,
but Ray, we could talk for so long.
Yes, I know. Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. It's fabulous. I've loved chatting with you, but I'm gonna say goodbye and thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you for all of you people who tune in and download the podcast. It really is a joy for us to know that what we're doing is valuable to some people. If you want to support us, you can go on my website, sonship.co.uk, and you can find out more about buying me a coffee or donating. You know, it costs to run the podcast and the website and everything else. So every little bit helps. And if you're feeling generous, then I will welcome your generosity.